Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 261. We are joined by Sammy Kuba today to talk a little bit about outage communication. With me on Skype is our guest, Sammy, but also we have Evan here who's joined us. Our leader here, typically Sajid, who kicks these things off, is out this week. So the inmates are running the asylum this week, so this should be fun. But before we get started...
We got through the intro, so right, that's the, like, that's usually our building block.
Yeah, that's the easy part. But yeah, before we get started, we'll go through our normal round of news, spend a few minutes talking about some new things that are popping up in Azure. And Evan, anything sticking out here for you?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the database stuff. We've announced that there's now the Azure Data Migration Service. Right now there's MySQL variant, PostgreSQL variant, and then the SQL Server variant, all of which are moving from allow you to migrate from your on-premises instance to the Azure hosted instance, which that's really cool, right? And a lot of these, the way that we're doing this now, or this is what's really cool, is we're doing it as where the source remains online. So you don't have to take your workload down to migrate. You can keep it up and running, migrate everything, and then turn it off and then just repoint your connection string. And theoretically, you would be up and running at that point.
Now, is this the migration service? I'm not as familiar with that, Evan. Does that also do anything beyond simply, you know, making this connection to one database, copying data, schema, all that stuff to another one? Does it do anything as far as like optimization or any kind of recommendations or anything, or is it strictly just like a data movement tool?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually not sure. I think the last time I looked at it, it was strictly a data migration tool, which in and of itself, right, is non-trivial, as you know. Get all the right accounts, get all that kind of stuff. And, but I think that's an interesting question. We should track down one of the PMs for that team and get them to come on and tell us what their future looks like.
Cool. Yeah, there's a couple things I had here. One of the first, we have to talk about blockchain because that's just normal. We have to talk about it. But there's a, you know, my team has released a version 1.6 of the blockchain workbench. For those who have been following this or are using this, some pretty welcome additions here that I think people are going to be happy about. So application versioning. So as you're creating new instances of your application, it used to be this crazy renaming process you had to go through. To keep basically redoing the versioning yourself. And now we do that automatically for you. So that's a pretty big one. There's some stuff on egress messaging. So there's an API that's been exposed there now to EventGrid that's has a schema and those kind of things for the data that can also be coming out of these systems that can be integrated with other existing systems. There's some optimization around, you know, the inheritance for the core contract class that gets created. And then there's some new features for the updates directly from in Workbench so you can upgrade from inside the UI, which is pretty cool. So that's that. The other thing that was going on this week that's pretty big in, I believe it's Vegas, is the CES show.
Yeah.
And there's a blog post out here from one of our team. And, you know, basically a big part of what's happening in technology today, and this is the Consumer Electronics Show, is not just fancy TVs, though I did see some pretty cool stuff there, like the rollable TV from LG looked pretty freaking awesome, where it basically just rolls up into a kind of a ball, so it's a foldable screen. A lot of these devices now are starting to communicate directly with each other. You know, that dream that we had years ago of your toaster talking to your refrigerator and all that stuff. IoT has advanced pretty significantly. And so that along with AI are two core tenets that kind of, you know, hit home for us in Azure, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's always kind of been the dream. Like you said, for years, it's actually starting to show up. these days, which is kind of neat. So a couple of things that caught my attention. One, this is really kind of your last warning for people that use OMS or Operations Management Suite, right? We announced a number of months ago, actually almost this time last year, we announced that the OMS portal was going to migrate into the Azure portal and that the OMS portal was going to be retired. And that is happening effective in, what's today? Today's the 11th, maybe? 5 days. I'm sorry, 4 days at this point on the 15th. Now, most people have probably done it, but if you're still using the old portal, now is the time to go because you're rapidly running out of time. And then the other one that caught my attention, I actually need to go check this out because I didn't see this till we jumped in today, but there's an article about scaling to 10,000 VMs. I remember when we were stoked to be able to scale up to 30 VMs or something like that, right? So the thinking about that not only can people do that, but there's recommendations for the best way and fastest way to do it. That's pretty amazing from a scale perspective. Although I'd love to see what that bill is per minute. it's non-trivial per minute cost at that point. Do not do that under your MSDN subscription, I suspect.
Yeah, I think the Azure team would probably have some quota questions for you when you do things like this. It is super cool. And the fact that we have guidance means that someone's doing it. And so I think that hits home to what kind of scale we're talking about now in the cloud. It's not onesie twosies anymore. It's a pretty large scale endeavor.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I think that's good from the news perspective. I wanted to go ahead and give our guest a chance to introduce himself. Tell us a little bit about him, what he does at Microsoft, and then kind of dive into the topic at hand here today. So, Sammy, take it away.
Super. Thanks, Kiel. So, my name is Sammy Kuber, and I run the Azure Communications team. This is every time that Azure has an outage or if there's any maintenance or any time that there's a service-impacting event, then we were going to communicate to customers. And we decide kind of how, the best channels we build. We're trying to build the best experience possible. And so, this is what me and the team do.
Yeah, and this is – so Sammy and I are actually on the same, bigger team. So we spend a lot of time because when outages happen, that's when our team hopefully has done our homework up front so that it's not nearly as big of a deal. But obviously things get a little bit hectic. But I invited Sammy on because, for our audience who has been around Azure for a long time, they may or may not have noticed that the way that we communicate has changed dramatically. Historically, there's the server cell dashboard, which is still out there and it's still in use. But it used to be that everything went out on the server cell dashboard. These days, we've gotten a lot more granular, a lot more targeted. And that's where, Sammy, you spend a lot of time thinking about what should go where, how should we surface it.
We do. Absolutely. And Evan, we think about it. We live and work in Azure, and so often our head's in the cloud. But for a lot of customers, when we think about outages and kind of service impacting events, we don't think of Google and as Amazon as our competitors. A lot of our competition is really on-prem, because when customers do have an outage or they have impact on-prem, they know what's going on. They get their emails, they get their updates, they can speak to their leadership.
When there's an outage, somebody on the shoulder, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. When it's an outage in the cloud, no one really knows what's happening and it can feel very lonesome. And asking customers to go and check the status page. And then if you put something on the status page, everybody and their dog thinks they're impacted. And it's not the case. So we've absolutely been trying to get very granular. We're trying to get fast with building a lot of automation. We're choosing how customers can consume our content, whether it's email, webhook, SMS, kind of something more enterprisey than, just logging into somewhere and checking or pulling off a status page.
It's very much, to some extent, it's almost the push versus the pull, right? You tell us where you want us to push the information versus historically, you got to go out the server cell dashboard and check and see, right? And keep refreshing, getting an update.
Absolutely. And it's terrible because like our customers, their parents and they spend time in the swimming pool, the library, they're not in the portal all the time looking for bad news. Right. And so we've got to be very mindful that, as people are moving around, we've got to be able to get our message out to them and in the channels they want.
So I guess as when y'all think about this, Sammy, and you think about things do go down, right? That is a reality in the real world. So it's a key part of the conversation. If you look at all the different things that you've changed in the last number of years as we've kind of evolved this, what's the one that really stands out for you that you felt like was really you know, a significant step change in how we communicate? Or is there one?
Yeah, so we have a few tenets and guiding principles. I think that there's two kind of things. Number one, customers being able to consume our content how they like is a great thing. And, you know, customers will, it allows us to kind of integrate into IT and enterprise systems very easily with Webhack and customers. And I like that piece. But the one that's happened very, the one or two that have happened recently are, number one, when any customer is impacted by an outage, we enable them for free support. And this is something that was revolutionary at the time because not a huge amount of our customers have support contracts. And for me, it felt, you know, a little bit elitist. Like if you pay for it and you have an outage, you're going to get the support you need. But if you don't have a contract, you know, a support contract, you can kind of be left in the dirt. And it didn't feel right for a lot of the team here. So being able to provide any customer, regardless of their spend, access to support when there's an outage is a great thing. And the second piece that I'm very excited about, and it's 50% launched at the moment, which means 50% of customers can get it by the end of January. It should be all customers, is that for any outage, regardless of how many customers are impacted, and a lot of our outages only impact a small number of customers, but they can request an RCA without contacting support, without reaching out to an account manager. They can just click a button in the Azure Service Health Experience in the portal, and they can request an RCA. And it principally, I love it because it means that, again, regardless of how big, if it was a small outage that was relatively insignificant, if you think about kind of the big events that have happened in the cloud, that customer has still bet their business on Azure. It still caused them impact. And we still have a responsibility to kind of let them know, hey, these are our learnings. This is where we failed. And this is why it won't happen again. And so, I mean, feature-wise, we could pick other things that are kind of far more scalable and durable and more impressive. But when I think about the customer experience, those few things, for me, I think it reflects a great culture that we're doing. And I'm very excited about those things.
Yeah, so, go ahead, Kev.
No, I was just going to say, so backing up a little bit. So being able to consume this information in a medium when I'm in the swimming pool versus I'm in the office is something that's real, right, and needs to be accounted for because these are pretty large enterprises and companies that have kind of bet on Azure. And so being able to get that information quickly, I'd like to understand a little bit about that. Like, so, you know, building a nice dashboard that people can come into or even a mobile application that they can see the information in is one thing. But, you know, you think about if we're building that tech on top of our tech and that tech happens to be the thing that failed, then you're in a catch-22 situation, right, where you can't. The thing that would be feeding you that information is down. So how do you kind of account for that? Because that seems like a really hard problem. You know,
that is an excellent observation, Kale. So the two things. So our AZ, we call it AZNS, our Azure Notification System, it's on dial tone infrastructure, which is fantastic. But it doesn't mean that there are things that could potentially block the last mile notification. Now, in an event like this, where we're kind of, if the customer's expecting an email or an SMS, and we have an outage, as I said, that the push piece is on dial tone infrastructure. But if there's something blocking that, unfortunately, that's when we revert back to the horrible mechanisms we have of communicating by putting things on a status page. You know, we have to start responding via Twitter. I mean, and we have kind of BCDR mechanisms, but they're in no way as sexy as our kind of our prime time stuff that to this day hasn't suffered an outage yet. And I know I'm speaking to, and I'm away next week. So if it happens next week, I'm fine.
I'm not on call either. So you know what? If you cursed us, that's okay. I do want to step back a little bit because you said something earlier, which I suspect those of us that are in the call or people that are, you know, fairly familiar with kind of customizing their notifications are aware of, but I'm not sure that a lot of people get the distinction. What do you mean? You said service health versus the service dashboard. What do you mean by the service health part of the portal?
So if customers log into their Azure Management Portal, there's a blade there called the Azure Service Health Blade. From there, they can kind of get an overview of the health of the services that they have in the regions that they've deployed. From there, they can start creating alerts for what they want to see depending on what's going on. So they can pick which subscriptions, which services, and which regions go to which people. Now, for a large enterprise, you might have if you think of big enterprises that have a worldwide presence, you know, with thousands of subscriptions, they may only want to say, look, these are the kind of subscriptions we care about. The other ones belong to marketing. The other one belongs to sales. And you can say, okay, I'm going to let my IT team know about this, but also my sales managers will know that we're experiencing an outage. So my SQL and WestJS can go to my SQL team and my this subscription.
So you can really slice and dice it. Kind
you can
of
slice you and dice. But we took it a kind of a step further because we know that even at a subscription level, if I have 5,000 resources and I get a communication from the Azure team saying, hey, look, VMs in this region may be impacted and you know I've got 5,000 VMs, what do I do? We've now taken it to a level where customers can create alerts at a resource level. So for about 33, 34 of the services that are on Azure, which include all the core services like virtual machines and storage, SQL, VPN gateway, IoT, there's a bunch of them. They can actually go in and say, hey, if this resource goes down, I want an SMS, I want an email, I want a webhook, I want to trigger a function, whatever the case is. I can now do this at a resource level, which means, number one, you're not waiting for a human being to send a message. This is using our its own kind of heartbeat system, which is in pretty much near real time. But it's a great thing. And because it's integrated into the notification system, it means you can create functions and say, hey, if my VM goes down, I want to start spinning up other stuff as well. Using functions, so it's a fantastic way not only to kind of stay informed, but also ensure a little bit of a durability within a customer's kind of resource.
So wait a minute. So let me make sure I understood that. So I can actually go and say not just which subscription and which type of resource, but if I want to drill down all the way down to VMA versus VMB, I can go to that degree of granularity.
Absolutely. I can say when VMA goes down, I want an SMS. When VMB goes down, send this group an email. When VMC goes down, trigger a logic app. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's very exciting.
So I have a question on that point. So, okay, let's say I get notified that there's an outage. What's the follow-up look like afterward? Is it just this is the outage, or are we going to have a follow-up notification that says, hi, we've taken care of this issue. You no longer have to worry,
We would absolutely not go to bed until the outage is mitigated and our customers are fully aware of what's going on. So what usually happens is we'll give customers a cadence on what's going on. Now, we would love to provide ETAs, being very honest with you, but it's something that's very complicated to do. We don't want to set the wrong expectation. We do provide in the communications that we send, we will provide a cadence and say, hey, look, we'll give you an update in 1 hour, 2 hours, or whatever the case is. What we usually do with those updates is that's when we'll have something new to say. So if we say, look, we're deploying a fix at the moment, the next update will be in 2 hours. The reason we're not saying an hour is because we know, look, this deployment is going to take 2 hours to bake in, and in 2 hours we should have something to say. Once we mitigate, we try and tell customers what the issue was at a high level. And I hope most people would understand that, look, it's in the fog of war. We've just kind of mitigated. Unpacking all of that can be tricky, but we'll provide as much information as we can. And as we mentioned earlier, if customers still feel the need to say, hey, listen, I need more. This wasn't good enough. Like, I really need to get a little bit kind of level deeper. All customers who were communicated to, who were potentially impacted, can click a button within their portal, request an RCA. It comes to the same team, the team that Evan and I are on, and we make sure that we offer a far richer RCA now that we've had, a day or two. We offer kind of an SLA of 7 days, but that gives us time to really kind of deep dive a little bit more and go and provide an artifact to the customer there, or their customers or their management team that's hopefully more useful and can kind of rebuild all the trust and all the goodness in Azure.
So I have one more question following up on that. I'm just kind of curious, and I know I joined the call a little late, so please stop me if this has been asked already, but I'm curious, is there some kind of mechanism that y'all are leveraging to produce RCAs based on historical data? I mean, I would assume that would be the case, but I'm just kind of curious how you're leveraging the data from past outages to help to root cause analysis and then provide the best possible output when you do put those together.
So the goal is that once we root cause something, we shouldn't have the same outage twice. That's the goal. So whenever it's not that we have kind of previous sentiment or previous learnings from RCAs that we can just kind of funnel into new RCAs or we can recycle. When we speak about an RCA, we always comment on, look, these are the things that we broke. This is what happened, whether it was human automation, whatever the case is, but we'll be very transparent about it. But we also providing the next steps. And once those next steps are implemented, it should mean that this type of RCA or this event does not occur again under these circumstances.
I was going to say, Sam, I think there's maybe what she's asking about is, if you think about it, there are some things that, for example, we, you know, a piece of hardware that we know has a bug, right? So, you know, maybe a top of rack switch that, you know, we know this version of the firmware has a problem and we're working with the vendor on fixing it. It's possible we might see multiple of those switches fail over, you know, a certain amount of time. Now, what we do do is, you know, we put in the right telemetry to detect it so that we detect it very quickly and mitigate it very quickly. Those we can absolutely kind of toast back. Hey, we, you know, this switch failed. We know why. We don't have to do any investigation to do that, right? Because we have the data. But I think, yeah, to your larger point, I, by and large, we don't, it may look like the same thing to a customer, yeah. Right? My VM rebooted or I lost network connectivity, but they're, as a general rule, if we actually get the same issue twice, there's some people that get very uncomfortable questions directed at them if that happens in the component teams.
It is. We have a weekly kind of live site review where we review everything, and the same outage twice is a scary thing. If that's ever on the table, that's a big problem. Yeah,
those are the ones that you just kind of want to sit back and watch a little bit, because it's a little bit painful to see. Although those meetings are great because we learn, and it's a cross group thing, right? And they're really interesting exercises to get all this insight into all this perspective on the different ways we can keep this from happening again.
I had another question on the alerts. So specifically, if when something goes down, there's a catastrophic failure, hardware failure, something like this, that's something that's very binary where, like, it's broken, we're looking into it, fix it, RCA, the whole thing. What about the cases where something's not totally down, where, like, a customer might say things feel slow, and we are understanding that something is impacting maybe performance or something like this, but it hasn't really caused an outage yet? Is that something, too, that by default you would say, hey, Kale, by the way, you have some VMs that are probably running a little slow right now? Because I don't tend to see those messages. I'm wondering, do you wait till it hits a threshold before you start, you know, sounding all the alarms? You know,
I'll tell you an interesting one, Kale. So with most of our services, we have SLAs, you know, like a single instance VM has a 3.9 SLA, and like how we ingest data from kind of, say, log analytics has SLAs and so on. What we found is that for some of our services, take the ingestion of data through log analytics, the SLA on this is hours, but customers are used to having this ingested in minutes. And so we've had instances where ingestion has taken 45 minutes as opposed to the usual 10, 15 minutes that they're used to. Although we haven't broken SLA, we have broken an expectation with our customers. And so while, you know, from a terms and condition, from a legal standpoint, we're not obliged to communicate, we didn't do anything wrong, you know, we're fully within our T's and C's, it breaks the spirit of the SLA. And so we do communicate on those outages where there's degraded performance or where things are bad that we've picked up on, that we've observed, or that customers have given a signal. We'll absolutely communicate on those as well. And again, it's not because, you know, we've broken an agreement, but we've broken the spirit. And, like, you know, we really believe it that you know, customers have an expectation with us, and yeah, if we break that in any kind of way, shape, or form, then we will strive to communicate on those issues where they flag. Now, if we have telemetry that's designed not to fire until an SLA breaks, then okay, we're kind of in the dark a little bit. But for the most part, our telemetry is quite rich, and so we have good optics into what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kale, networking is kind of the classic one where it's that, right? Like, a network device starts misbehaving, it's probably not going to fall entirely off, because when that does, right, that's pretty easy to detect. It's the ones that kind of start dropping more packets than usual, or they're, you know, they can't handle the traffic for whatever reason. Those we very much communicate. I think that's there's a subtlety here that I think we throw the term outage out very frequently and very broadly. Right, we kind of call things, you know, live site incidents. That's our internal or service impacting events, depending on the scale. But outage is a little bit more generic. But I think anytime you think a customer's think they're impacted by something, they should, you know, again, if we know that you're impacted, we're going to tell you, right? We don't try and hide this. But if you think you're impacted and it's something that, you know, we weren't sure that you were impacted, so we didn't communicate, or we didn't think you were, so we didn't communicate to you, by all means, reach out, right? Sammy and team will make sure that we do get that RCA then. And now they got that. Now you've got the button in the portal to just request it, right? So as customers, feel free to err on the side of asking if you don't know, right? You shouldn't. We don't intend to leave you in the dark by any stretch. Does that sounds help, good. Kale?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I think the other thing, just kind of wrapping up here, one of the things I would like to understand is, you know, for the listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with all the features and things that we have inside the portal and how to adjust these, is this something that your average Joe or anybody who's using Azure can just walk into the portal and do the stuff through the portal through a GUI interface, kind of click through and set up these things? Can you do this programmatically? What's the user experience that people should go through for this?
That's a great point, actually, and it's something I must have glossed over. So within the portal, everyone has access to it. Anyone can create these alerts. Technically, I think they do cost, but it's like after the first, don't quote me, 20,000 alerts, you start getting pricing. I mean, it's really not going to break anyone. It's not making Azure any money. I would call it, it's a free service for by and large. So there is a UI. We're always trying to make it a little bit better. We're trying to make it a little bit easier. And that's for creating service health alerts that we spoke about. The one that we kind of spoke about as well previously with resource health alerts, we have not created a UI around that. That is only available for customers creating it through ARM templates. And the reason being is because it's very easy if customers have 20, 30, 40, 50,000 resources to start clicking a couple of buttons and then put themselves and their phone providers into a huge amount of bother very quickly.
Hey, so I just got 30,000 texts. Look at that. Oh, that's great.
So we have documentation on how they can do it. It's on the Azure Docs, and they can look at resource health alerts and setting it up. You can use ARM, you can use the UI, you can use PowerShell to set it up. We've got a lot of documentation on there, but we just didn't create a UI around the resource health alerts.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what it's. There's always these little hidden gems, and so we want to make sure our listeners are aware of where the gems are, so that they can take advantage of them.
Yeah, no. This is the kind of stuff. It's a little bit funny because I suspect Sammy kind of has the same problem that I do. You know, in the world that I live in, nothing ever works right. But the reality is that, you know, things like outages are, relatively speaking, you know, very uncommon. You know, but it's a key part of the experience, and it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about how to optimize. Sammy, you've got a worldwide team that you work with trying to, you know, make sure that this works for everybody, right? And you work really closely with the different component teams to make sure that we have the right signals, you know, all that kind of information, so we know when to fire these messages.
Absolutely. And we as time goes on, we're trying to remove humans from the equation altogether. And we're using the technology underneath resource health to really integrate into service health. And so our time to notify is one of the time to notify and accuracy on which resources are impacted are two primary things we're trying to push.
Yeah. Well, no, this is great, Sammy. Kale, Kendall, any other questions for Sammy?
No, this has been awesome. Really, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. I guarantee you this is very important to our listeners because, you know, this is like core services, right? They need to understand if things are healthy and running well. So really appreciate this.
I really appreciate having you on. Thank you very much.
Well, I also want to reiterate what Evan said just now, just the fact that this is so it's unfortunate when this happens, but the reality is it does happen. So the fact that we're taking steps to make it the best possible experience, I think that's just really admirable. And the work that you're doing is definitely really critical to all of us in the field, but also our customers as well. So thanks for coming on and sharing this. I know I took a lot away from this conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. Cool. Thanks. And Sammy, if I think some of the key links that I know you send out typically when people ask about notifications and resource health, shoot me an email with those and we'll get them put on the site when we publish the podcast, and we'll make sure the community gets them as well.
For sure.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, folks. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.